Welcome once again to BadQuaker.com podcast. This is podcast episode number 16, and today is Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. I'm Ben.
And I'm Ty.
There's one overwhelming thing that's been rolling around in my mind. Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey Tucker.
This is pretty much all we've heard for like the last 3 weeks.
Jeffrey Tucker. Earlier today, I interviewed Jerry Garcia. Then I woke up. A little while ago, I interviewed Jeffrey Tucker, and we had a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. We're going to air it with, you know, if everything goes right, we don't get another lightning strike. We're going to air that tomorrow on Thursday. Speaking of the lightning strike, we disappeared off the internet for a few days there. We took a very close lightning strike that put us back into the Stone Age, way back into the 80s when there was no internet, no cable TV, and no wonderful things like that.
Although the wonderful thing about bundling is if one thing goes out, you lose everything.
Yeah. You know, while I'm on the topic, I might as well take a poke at Time Warner Cable, too. We had the lightning strike Friday. Saturday morning, I called their customer service. The person who I spoke with, which was a young, probably early 20s male who was clearly in a hurry, assured me that they knew all about the area outage and that they were taking care of it and there was no action needed on our part and that they would get it up shortly. So all day Saturday rolled by. We had no functioning internet, no telephone, no television. Sunday rolls through. Finally, Sunday afternoon, I called back to see if we had an uptime, specifically because if we didn't have something going by Tuesday, by about Tuesday or so, I was going to need to make some arrangements so that I could still make the interview with Jeffrey Tucker. If that needed to be, you know, going out to find a hot spot somewhere or whatever, some kind of arrangement would have to be made. So Sunday afternoon I called, and the first person that I spoke with Sunday, and this is, again, my second contact with Time Warner, the first person on Sunday, basically I told them, it was another early 20s male, you know, you could tell by the voice. He was also in a hurry. And so, as I explained the situation, he said, okay, let me put you on hold. He says, the sound is going to go blank for a minute, but don't hang up. I'm still here with you. And then he hung up. And I know he hung up because I'm calling on my cell phone. We don't have a house phone because it's in the bundle.
Right.
And my cell phone goes bleep, bleep, bleep. And I get the little note that the line has been disconnected. So I call back, and I get another early 20s male who's clearly in a hurry. Didn't really want to listen to me that we had an outage that had been going since Friday night and that we had rebooted continually. And so he wastes about a half an hour, 40 minutes of my time going from device to device, rebooting everything in the house. And then he says, oh, well, I guess we'll have to schedule you for appointment maybe Wednesday afternoon. Now, this is Sunday. I'm supposed to be out for like 5 days?
Yeah. Not just cable, but internet and telephone.
Yeah. So I'm like, no, this is not acceptable. And so he says, thank you for being a Time Warner customer, and hangs up on me. Nice. So I call back again. Now this time, this is what my first, second, third, fourth call. My fourth call to Time Warner. And finally I get a lady who's polite, not in a hurry, and from the sound of her voice, probably mid-30s to maybe mid-40s, something like that. That means, now here's the difference, that means she's probably doing this for a living. Those early 20s males were doing it to fill in college time or to for spare cash or whatever. Either way, they didn't really appreciate the job that they had with Time Warner, and they should lose it. But anyway, so this lady, Rosemary, comes on, and she was very patient. She listens to my whole story. She did not make me waste time rebooting things yet again. She scheduled it as an emergency. And within a couple hours, we had a Time Warner guy out here and the friendliest guy you'd ever want to meet, got us all hooked up. He found where the lightning had blown a thing out in a couple yards over from us, not even in our yard, and takes care of the whole thing, gets us back up online. It's slick as a whistle. Now, that's the difference between somebody who cares and somebody who just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. So how can I possibly, here we are supporting the market and supporting private industry, how can I be ragging on Time Warner Cable when obviously this is a poor innocent company was struck by lightning? Why can't I have some sympathy? Well, you know what? If it were a free market, I wouldn't have to go to Time Warner Cable for their cable.
I would
have a variety, but Time Warner Cable has a government allowed or a government mandated monopoly.
Yep.
I don't have a choice.
It's starting to be broken up now because companies like Verizon and AT&T are kind of muscling in using backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not cable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's starting to break up those monopolies, and I think here in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to start seeing multiple cable options in the area, but
even then, all those companies you mentioned, Verizon, AT&T, all those companies are also government-sponsored or government-authorized monopolies.
Yep.
I can't, Ben Stone, start my own cable company tomorrow, even if I had...
Or phone company?
No,
or...
I could have buckets full of $100 bills laying around just waiting for me to start my own phone company or my own cable company or my own internet provider, and I can't do it.
Nope.
I can't do it without government permission. So it's not a free market. It's not even remotely free.
Yep.
I hear people say all the time, well, it's mostly free market. Really, you put a dog on a chain, is it mostly free?
Yeah.
What about if you give it 3 more links on that chain? Is it mostly free now? You have a bird in a cage. Is it free? What about if it's in a bigger cage? Is it free?
Right.
This is a ridiculous concept.
And it irritates me because people say, well, you know, we're the most free country in the world. You cannot be more free than someone else.
You're either free or you're
freedom
not.
Freedom is not something you can have by degrees.
Right. Well, besides that, I've had that line used on me by my brother. Now, my brother, who regularly travels the world and who also has property in Thailand, if you're in Thailand, on his property in Thailand, and you decide you want to, milk a cow and sell the milk, is the government going to hassle you for that?
Nope.
How about this? How about if you're on his property in Thailand and you decide you want to sell Kool-Aid, set up a lemonade stand and sell lemonade.
Grow vegetables.
Are you going to be harassed by the government in Thailand because you're growing vegetables in your front yard? Certainly not. And yet, there are cities in the United States who are using the muscle of government to hassle their people over things like that.
Yep.
Woodpecker. Woodpecker. Let me pull up the story. Okay. This is from Fredericksburg, Virginia. An 11-year-old, oh, I should give my reference, huh? This is WUSA9.com news. Breaking news, live video from 9 News Now at WUSA9.com. A Gannett company. Of course, another government-allowed monopoly. Okay, so Fredericksburg, Virginia, 11-year-old Skylar Capo sprang into action the second she learned that a baby woodpecker in her dad's backyard was being attacked by the family cat. So here's just a quick recap of the story. The cat's attacking a baby woodpecker. The little girl runs out into the yard, shooes the cat away, picks up the woodpecker and brings it in to keep it safe. Now, her mom's going to take her home to her mom's house. They're at her dad's house. Her mom's going to take her home to her mom's house. So they couldn't find the parent woodpecker. They couldn't find the nest that it came out of. They're just stuck with this baby woodpecker that's partially traumatized from the cat. So they take it with them, and they're going to take it and nurse it for a day or two and see if they can get it back on its feet so it can fly, and then they'll turn it loose. Now, here's the alternative. They can leave it in the yard and let it die.
Yeah.
Or they can just let the cat kill it. That's the alternative. there's help it, or there's let it die. There's no third alternative.
Yeah.
Now, maybe somebody might be saying, well, you could call Health and Human, or not Health and Human Services, you could call Animal Services. Well, not necessarily. You may not even know that that kind of service is available, or, you know.
A lot of times, even if you try to call Animal Services, if it's for a wild bird, they won't do anything about it.
Well, here, where we're at, and I don't know what the situation is in Fredericksburg, Virginia, but here, where we're at in Ohio, we had a stray dog that was hanging around outside and driving all the other dogs in the neighborhood crazy. So I go out and get a hold of it and hold on to it while I call to see if Animal Services can come out and pick it up. And it just so happened that it was outside of their working hours. And so, literally, the dispatcher says, well, what do you want me to do about it? I thought for a minute I was talking to Time Warner Cable.
Well, that's because Animal Services is a function of the government.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so anyway, so what do? They take the bird, the woodpecker, and they're going to try to nurse it back to health for a day or two until it gets on its feet. And, you know, no sane person would want to keep a woodpecker as a pet.
No.
So of course they're not going to try to keep it. They're just going to try to nurse it back and let it go. Well, on the way home, they stopped at a Lowe's hardware store. And they didn't want to leave the woodpecker in the hot car while they're in Lowe's.
Right.
So they take it in with them into the Lowe's. Well, it just so happened that a tax-feeding vampirous slug, let's see if we have her name. Maybe I'll find it in a second. Anyway, there's one of these tax-feeding vampiric slugs that's inside the Lowe's doing some shopping. And spots this family with the baby bird. And so she whips out her badge, and they said that she was so nervous that she was shaking. She whips out her badge and starts informing them that they're breaking federal law because they've captured a wild bird, and it happens to be a migratory bird. So they said, oh, well, we didn't know. So they took it home and turned it loose that same day. And then they immediately called... the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. As soon as they got home, they turned loose the bird, and they called the Fish and Wildlife Service. The people on the phone there said, okay, great, you've done the right thing. Thanks for letting us know, and that's the end of it, right? No, 2 weeks later, this tax-feeding slug shows up at their door with muscle.
Yeah, and she's not shaking and trembling then, is
she? Oh, no, as long as she's got the deputy with his pistol... She's real brave now. And guess what? She slaps a $535 fine and possibly a year in jail because they decided to let their 11-year-old child save a baby bird from getting killed.
Yep.
Now, there are actually people who tell me, well, I like the idea of a free market, and I think we should have more services privatized, but some things we just can't leave to the private sector. We have to have government for. Like what? Well, one of the most common things is, well, like the justice system. The justice system?
What justice system?
Justice? I wrote an article. I'm really on a roll today, huh? I wrote an article called...
I was afraid I was going to rant and rave.
Uh-huh. Well, so far you haven't had any mic time. I wrote an article back in June called To Establish Justice. And I want to read just one little section of this. There is no aspect of the United States justice system that has the capacity to determine or the ability to hand out justice. It is a system that makes up its own laws, judges its own laws, enforces its own laws, profits from its own laws, and answers only to itself for its own laws. And it does so while extracting its primary funding forcibly from people who are not and have never been even accused of a crime. Now that's exactly what the federal justice system is.
Mm-hmm.
How can we possibly... expect something that does not contain a hint of justice in it.
Yep.
How can we possibly expect that to produce and distribute justice?
And it's so funny because you hear the history teachers in the public school go, well, there are checks and balances built into the system.
Yeah, the government's going to look at the government and see if you need more government.
Yeah.
And if you need more government, they'll take your money to make it.
Yeah.
What a great checks and balances.
How is that checks and balances? They're all on the same team.
That would be like if there was a bank who could just print its own money and didn't have to answer to anybody for it. And if they were low on money, they could just get more money. And if they had, like, buddies in other banks that they wanted to bail out that couldn't run their own... Oh, wait a minute. That
kind of the...
Yeah, that's the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay, I've ranted enough about that. I know you wanted to mention something about a book that you're extremely familiar with. You've read it many, many times.
There was a period about 2 years there where I don't think I was ever not reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would read other books, too, but there was always a bookmark in there, and I was always reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I got so familiar with it, I could just open it to any portion of the book and just start reading and know where I was.
Yep.
When I was, about 10?
Yeah, probably right around in there.
We moved from Moro, Ohio to Reno, Nevada. And we drove there, and it took us, 4 days?
Yeah, probably about that.
And
we weren't in a hurry.
To keep me occupied, I was given a pretty substantial book. It was a 3-book set of the Anne of Green Gables books.
But it was all bound in one hardbound
right.
issue.
And so I fell in love with it. I read it so many times that, the book itself is just falling apart. And, but I hadn't read it in years. And so during I keep wanting to call it a power outage, but it really was not a power outage. It was
an information outage.
During the great information outage of 2011, picked it up and decided to give it a read again. And while I was reading it, I realized something that I hadn't, noticed when I was a kid reading it, was that, because if you're not familiar with the Anne of Green Gables books, it's set on Prince Edward Island in the early 1900s, farm country, little tiny towns, and they would continually reference these different societies, like the Improvement Society or the Church Ladies Society. And these societies would go around the town to all of the members of the town, and they would canvass subscriptions, basically getting people to give them money to do things,
mm-hmm.
like painting the town hall or putting roads in, or things like that.
Now, they took a sheriff's deputy and a SWAT team with them to do this, right?
I don't think so. I think it was just the little old church ladies.
But they did beat people and use force and violence.
Well, church ladies are awful pushy. And I thought it was really interesting because nowhere in the book do they ever make mention of there being, like, a mayor of the town or a sheriff of the town or anything like that. And all of these public works for the town are all done through voluntary donations from the townspeople. And it was really kind of, like, shocking to see it because there's... You know, as an anarchist, you're constantly, well, what about the roads? What about this? What about that? And to see that it was just so casually taken care of.
Right.
You know, it wasn't even a big deal. Like, it was not even so important that she needed to point out that, oh, they didn't have a government in this town. It was just like, oh, yeah, they decided they wanted to paint that building, so they just went around and subscribed, and then blah, 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 mm-hmm. the rest of the story.
Yeah.
It was not, it was just not a big deal.
Most people don't realize that most of, most of, especially in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States and Canada, and all throughout the 1800s, if a town wanted a park, you know, the first thing, they didn't go and have a levy. They didn't go and borrow money on the town and then tax their... They didn't do any of those things. They went around and saw if there was interest in it. Mm-hmm. And if there was interest in it, people would back it.
Yep.
And so perhaps a merchant would want to give some money to something like that because maybe, you know, it might be built across the street from him. And so he could see an advantage to having a park in the middle of town across the street from him. Or to improve a road. Mm-hmm. Well, the merchant could obviously see that his business would be better if a road was improved.
Yep.
Or if there's some public building that needs to be painted, and it's going to beautify the town, and it's going to make everyone feel better about living there. You know, all these are positive things, and people are willing, if you don't stick a gun in their face and force them,
yep,
people are willing to do things and help and function together,
yep,
and cooperate.
And it, you know, it would talk about how there were... You know, they'd be at the society meeting and they'd say, oh, don't bother going up to so-and-so's house. He's notoriously stingy, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was not a big deal. Like, if that person didn't give to paint the hall, mm-hmm, well, you know, everybody in town knew that he didn't do that. And he wasn't forced to do it. He could still go use that hall.
Right.
It's just that every one of his neighbors knew that he didn't give,
yeah,
to that.
So whatever he says, you take with a grain of salt, and you realize, you know, you treat him the way you need to, mm-hmm, and you don't necessarily, I mean, if it's an important enough offense, you can ostracize him or shun him or kick him out of town or whatever, but which they did a lot of in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. If you had a town with a constant person who was a problem, they would literally run them out of town.
Mm-hmm.
That's not just some crazy thing from the movies or a saying or something. They would literally tell you, you're going to have to leave.
Yeah.
And that's how civilized people take care of things like this.
Because people are capable of governing themselves without an outside force.
Mm-hmm.
They are capable of being responsible for themselves. And I'm going to butcher it horribly, but there's a quote, I think, from Mises, who says, if you don't trust laissez-faire as a way of governing,
mm-hmm,
people, then you also have to throw out all governments. Because if you can't trust people to,
yeah,
govern themselves...
What are governments?
Yeah.
Other than people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, a different way of saying it is like... If you're so afraid of your neighbors, and you're so afraid of strangers, mm-hmm, and you're so afraid of these other people that you feel like you need the state to protect you, well, realize the state is those people.
Mm-hmm.
The people acting is the state. There,
yeah,
is no, you know, it's not like the state is some magic invisible person that's floating around up there doing good things, like, you know, like the I'm thinking of the fairy from the Good Witch of the North, that's what,
oh,
it was,
yeah,
from Wizard of Oz, that just floats in on a bubble and, oh, I'm here to fix everything, ding, and everyone's happy. You know, the state's not like that. The,
yep,
state is the actions of people, and if people can't be trusted to govern themselves, how would the state be trustworthy?
Mm-hmm.
And especially then, okay, so that if puts the state on an equal level with people.
If you can't trust the state, if you can't trust people to voluntarily control themselves,
mm-hmm,
how are you going to trust people with guns trying to control you? Like,
and
how are you going to trust people forcibly?
And then when you take into consideration that, and I'm just going to say this as brutally as it comes out of my mouth without even worrying about who I'm going to offend. But it takes a particular type of person to decide that they want to be in government,
mm-hmm,
and rule other people.
Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about, you know, post office workers and you know, DMV clerks. You know, those are the,
mm-hmm,
kind of people who they're just trying to make a living.
Yeah, mostly.
You know?
Yeah.
But people who are specifically go into government in positions of authority.
And this can also mean not just in elected positions, but those people that surround the elected,
mm-hmm,
politicians that influence policy. What kind of a person does that? I'll tell you the kind of person that does that, the kind of person I don't want anything to do with.
Yep.
Those kinds of people who think that they can manipulate other people's lives to run society the way they want it to run, that's what evil is. In my book, if I could sit down and write the definition of evil, I would say evil is a person who uses undue authority to try to manipulate other people into doing what they want them to do. That's what evil is.
Yep.
And that's the state. That's the essence of what the state is. If we all decide, if there's 20 of us here and we all decide, hey, let's all go down to Applebee's and have some snacks. And all right, well, we just made a decision. We do it. Some people in the group don't want to do that. Well, fine, don't do it.
Right.
But that's different than saying, okay, the two of us have decided that you're all coming with us to Applebee's.
Right.
And you're all paying for the bill.
Right.
And if you don't like it, we're going to put you in jail and, you know, or take your things. And if you resist, this guy here is going to tase you. And if you resist to that, he'll go ahead and shoot you.
Yeah.
That's the state. And that's the difference between voluntarism and the state. You can still get anything accomplished with voluntarism.
Yep.
It's just voluntary.
Because there's this idea that, you know, anarchy is chaotic and crazy and wild. But the fact of the matter is human beings are interested mm-hmm. in orderly, efficient ways of running their lives. They're interested in making their lives better. They're interested in progress.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are things that human beings are naturally interested in. And yes, anarcho-capitalism has a tendency to play off of the greed of humans.
Sure.
But that's not a bad thing. Greed is wanting your life to be better.
Yeah, it's wanting to, and this is not, greed and envy are two different things. Envy has some nasty sides to it, but greed being the desire to have more and have a better life and things like that, there's absolutely nothing immoral about that. If you're looking at the word greed and you're thinking more towards where you would be willing to harm someone to get what you want, well, that's what the state does.
Right.
So that's not anarchy. That's not capitalism. That's
right.
Not, you know, that's not a free market. That's what the state does. That's what the thieves at the state do.
And the thing is, like, if there's an easy way to do it,
mm-hmm.
if there's a way for you to get what you want and have a good life for your family and do so without harming other people,
right?
People are going to choose that path.
Right.
But if you're forced to be in a position where the only way that you can provide for your family
mm-hmm.
is to break laws and harm people,
mm-hmm.
you're going to do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's human nature is to try to survive.
Yeah.
And when people are put into positions, going back, I'll give another little commercial for one of my articles. I did an article recently on Washington, D.C.'s war against Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and specifically against Mexican farmers in northern Mexico. These guys, you know, generations, they've been on the same property. Their families, some of them, their families were farming that property before the Spaniards got here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the United States government decides they're going to manipulate corn prices, and they're going to manipulate the sugar market, and they're going to manipulate the rice market. And they throw these guys out of business.
Yep.
Now, you've got this farmer, and he's stuck with a series of questions, options. He can stay on his farm and starve and watch his children starve. He can attempt to move into a crowded, poor Mexican city where the accent the accent is so different that someone from one section... You know, if you've ever talked to somebody who's seriously from New Jersey, not casually from New Jersey, seriously from New Jersey, and someone who's seriously from Arkansas, and someone who's seriously from Alabama, and someone who's seriously from Minnesota, you understand the difference in accents. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have someone from Australia show up, and someone from New Zealand, and someone from Scotland, and you see the difference in the English language. But you can see that same thing in Mexico, traveling just from one small town, you know, one small farming town in northern Mexico, and you go into Mexico City, And the language difference is vivid. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, I mentioned Australia. We have a bunch of listeners in Australia.
Hi, Australia.
Anyway, so the U.S. government manipulates the prices of these farm items, and it forces the farmer into either starving on his farm, leaving the farm and his family's farm that they've been on for centuries, going in and struggling in a poor Mexican slum to try to get a job. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not safe. Or he can cross the border into the U.S. illegally, because crossing legally from Mexico into the U.S., unless you have piles of money, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So he's then either forced to go into a Mexican city, go illegally into the U.S. and try to find work, or switch his farm to farm something that's profitable.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help when they have, you know, drug mafiosos come up to him and say, hey,
yeah,
you can switch your farm over and everything will be great.
Yeah, we'll protect you.
Or you cannot switch your farm over.
And something might happen. You never know.
Houses burn down.
Sometimes children have accidents.
Yeah.
This is exactly what they're told. You know, you've got a lovely wife. I'd hate to see anything happen to her. Mm-hmm. That kind of statements. And it's clear what they're talking about. So he then is forced into a situation where he has to either break the law and migrate illegally into the U.S. to try to support his family, or take the risk of, you know, essentially fighting against the power of the drug lord and dying, mm-hmm. or break the law and grow something that grows in the wild anyway.
Yep.
And so this evil, evil farmer grows this evil, evil plant, and the drug lord makes the money off of it.
Yep.
And the farmer barely gets enough to survive.
And the funny thing is, the drug lord has all of his outfit equipped with guns that, you know, somehow or another, they got their hands on them when they were in the hands of the DEA.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. If you're unfamiliar with it, do a search, do an internet search on, what was the name of that? It was Operation something or other, where the U.S. government, agents of the U.S. government, knowingly furnished criminals, people who could not pass the checks and could not legally buy the guns. They allowed those criminals to buy guns en masse and export them to Mexico with the excuse that they wanted to track them and try to... Well, no, what they were actually doing was making an excuse to further outlaw guns in the U.S. Yep. by saying, oh, look, criminals are getting the guns. Well, yeah, the government is supplying them.
Yeah.
So the government literally has been... The U.S. government has literally been supplying arms, military-grade arms, to drug lords in Mexico.
Yep.
This is the act of... This is not even the act of a tyrant government. This is the act of a group of people functioning out of Washington, D.C. that are in direct acts of treason, mm-hmm. against the people of the United States.
Yep.
These are criminal acts of treason that, under any definition, should be prosecuted as such.
Yep.
Because they're in the process of destroying the United States.
But they won't be prosecuted because they're on the same team as the people who prosecute people.
Yeah. Justice.
Isn't it great?
It's all in the Justice Department. It's literally all in the Justice Department. All of those guys are parts of the Justice Department. There will be scapegoats. There'll be one or two agents that they'll sacrifice. And they'll say, oh,
they won't go to jail.
Probably not.
They may be fired.
If they do go to a jail, they'll go to special jails.
Yeah.
since we already mentioned Australia, for anyone listening in countries other than the U.S., the U.S. has different kinds of jails. We have jails like Pelican Bay, where Pelican Bay is a nasty, high security penitentiary, where if one inmate, let's take a different prison, let's say you're in San Quentin, and you have a beef with another prisoner in San Quentin, and you go to the authorities in San Quentin, and you make up a lie and rat out the other prisoner in San Quentin, if you can convince them that that other prisoner is guilty of what you accuse him of, they'll throw him in Pelican Bay. Once he gets in there, he's in isolation, he cannot see his family, he cannot have outside communication, and he may not even know why he was put over there.
Right.
And that's happening in the United States today. That's not, that we're not talking about China, we're not talking about something that happened in the former Soviet Union. We're talking about Pelican Bay, California, in the penitentiary system that functions under the guise of justice in the United States. But that's not the only kind of prisons we have.
And funny enough, if you go to those prisons, the majority of them are white upper middle class? No. They're poor Mexican immigrants.
Poor, yeah. And poor blacks, poor Mexican immigrants, almost entirely.
Almost all drug-related charges.
Yeah, and the white people that are in prison in the U.S. penitentiary system are typically not middle class or upper middle class or affluent in any way. Those people do not have to deal with the justice system.
Yeah.
They have ways of getting around that.
Or they go to jail that are not San Quentin.
Yeah, I think of the Martha Stewart situation. Now, first off, Martha Stewart was, she was not convicted for insider trading, despite what most people believe. She was not convicted for insider trading. The investigators lied to her and baited her into lying to them. Then, when she lied to them, they convicted her of obstruction of justice, which was lying to them.
Right.
So that's what she went to jail for. Except jail, in her case, is the same as jail for all the people of her class mm-hmm. in the U.S. It's an inconvenience.
Right.
One thing I want to do, there's I'm trying to line up an interview for September with a guy who has been in and out of the justice system for years, and it's far more common than most people realize. But this was a guy who made a couple mistakes, and it was not innocent. He did make those mistakes, and he did some things he shouldn't have done. But once the state's justice system locked its talons into him, there was no way for him to get out. He did everything he was supposed to do repeatedly, over and over and over, doing everything he was supposed to do, and he still couldn't get out of the system. They would still drag him back into it under one excuse or another. So I'm hoping to have that interview with him in September. And this would be a good time to mention, too, we're not exactly sure how this is going to go, but we may miss a few podcasts in September because there may or may not be some vacation time there.
Right.
So that's my rant about the justice system.
Well, while we're ranting, I've got a rant, and I was going to try to avoid ranting about it because I wasn't sure that I could actually do it in a way that
productive.
That didn't just make me sound like a raving, you know, lunatic. But I've calmed down some from last night, and I think I can approach it rationally.
Can I do a teaser intro thing?
Sure.
There are certain hot-button issues that if you say these things, there are certain things you can say to a liberal or a leftist or someone leaning towards the progressive side, and they will naturally assume that you're like a right-wing religious nut of some kind. Or there are people on the right-wing side, on the more conservative side, or on the, you know, perhaps the religious right, where if you say just the wrong thing, they will naturally assume that you're some kind of flaming liberal, that you're a communist, that you want to destroy American society. And each of these two sides will instantly leap to an erroneous conclusion, mm-hmm. and they won't hear anything else you have to say.
They're like cotton balls dipped in petroleum jelly.
Flammable.
Flammable.
Draw that line between flammable and explosive. Actually, there's a thing called rapid burn, but yeah. We won't go into that. Anyway, so you you kind of got a rapid burn going there.
I did. And you know, it's Facebook's fault. Facebook gets me into trouble a lot because there are so many things that people, you know, they see and they go, oh, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And they don't think about the repercussions of it.
Right.
And one in particular was posted on Facebook, and it was that the Health and Human Services is now having it to where it's mandatory for insurance, health insurance, to provide free birth control mm-hmm. to anybody who's on their health insurance.
There's that which is seen, and there is that which is unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And when the immediate effect is positive, it's almost certain that the long-term effect will be destructive.
Yeah, yeah. And so this policy mm-hmm. of basically free birth control, mm-hmm. because it's for Medicaid, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
Okay, so right now, let's just recap. So right now, the right-wing person, who is super religious, is screaming because the government is providing something they think is sinful.
Right.
And the left-wing person is screaming because they think you are going to attack them because you're religious.
Right.
And you think birth control is sinful.
Right.
Kai. Has sin anything to do with your opinion?
Not in the slightest bit. And here's where I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I'm attacking the left for promoting this because it is anti-feminist. That's where I'm coming from. And that is a shocking statement because feminism, as defined by most people,
mm-hmm.
is very pro-birth control.
Yep.
And I think being pro-birth control is being anti-female.
Yes.
And...
it's also anti-poor, but that's a different topic.
It is that. And I made that argument on Facebook, too. Mm-hmm. I made the argument that basically what you're doing is you want all these poor people
to not
have babies.
Right.
Because you don't want any more welfare recipients. Mm-hmm. And that's racist,
absolutely.
That's sexist,
uh-huh.
and that's misogynistic,
mm-hmm.
and that is a horrible, horrible thing for people to think.
Right.
And
the left is as guilty of that type of thing as the right.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not taking anything, that's not handing the right any advantages there, because there's a lot of that that goes on the right.
Yeah.
But the left always portrays themselves as, oh, they're above all that. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're dead guilty of that.
Yeah.
When you dump all these programs on poor people and you give them no alternatives and no choices and you take them out of the free market and force them to have to deal with government handouts, you are destroying their culture.
Yeah. And here's what irritates me, okay? I've been poor, mm-hmm. okay? And I've been in a situation where I wanted to take birth control.
Mm-hmm.
It cost me $10 a month to go to Planned Parenthood and get birth control.
Mm-hmm.
No insurance, $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the cheapest medications you can get on the market right now, other than maybe amoxicillin. Mm. Amoxicillin might be cheaper than birth control. That's not saying much.
Right.
Birth control is dead cheap already.
Right.
If you can't spend the $10 a month to go to Planned Parenthood and get birth control, maybe you need to reconsider whether or not you need to engage in the activities that require you to take birth control. If you can't afford $10 a month, I'm just saying.
Lay down the crack pipe.
So there's that.
Skip one crack hit per month.
Yeah, there
and
you
pay
go.
For your birth control.
Right there. So there's that, okay? But that's not even where I'm the most angry about.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I'm most angry about is because you, not you, but the, a female.
I lost the word I was going to use. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
A female. Let's say mid-20s female.
The metaphorical you.
Yes, the metaphorical you. Mid-20s female, stressed out, on the fringes of between the low class and the middle class, that whole stretch, working just to scratch a living, has insurance, but it's really bad insurance, you know, that level.
Mm-hmm.
And there are millions of these people. They go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, well, here, just take this birth control, and you won't have to deal with your nasty, horrible period.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah. Birth control, for a portion of the population, just fine.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything bad.
Mm-hmm.
Just fine. All it does is regulate your period.
Mm-hmm.
For another portion of the population, it means endometriosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, endometrial cancer, blood clots, gallbladder disease. All of these things are side effects of birth control that actually happen to people. This is not the list of side effects mm-hmm. that could possibly maybe happen to tiny little fraction possibly.
Here's a fun thing, too. Now, I could be wrong. There could be cases where what I'm about to say is not true. So I'm only going by what I'm aware of. But every birth control, other than devices, you know, every chemical or medical version of prescription birth control that I am aware of, they always tell you that it's not to be used by smokers.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can't convince me that doctors actually follow by that and say, okay, well, you smoke, I can't give this to you. What they
not
do
besides.
Is they tell you, well, you're going to need to stop smoking.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're not going to be able to stop smoking just so you can use your birth control.
Yeah.
So the doctors...
And it's... You can't even use the stop smoking apparatuses.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that boosts...
It's the same thing. So you have this portion of the population who you are handing them a prescription for a horrific life.
Mm-hmm.
A terrible life.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the lovely thing. The birth control's free. What about the surgeries to fix the problems caused by the birth control?
Right.
Those aren't free.
Right.
And I'll hone in on gallbladder in specific, because that is actually, there's good doctors,
mm-hmm.
if you have known gallbladder issues, will not put you on birth control.
Right.
Good doctors. Not all doctors. But if they know that you have gallbladder issues, they generally don't put you on birth control.
Uh-huh.
But if you have a family history of gallbladder disease, but you haven't presented with it yet,
mm-hmm.
and you go on birth control, it's almost assuredly you're going to get gallbladder disease.
Yeah.
And you're going to have your gallbladder removed. Mm-hmm. And that's not free.
Right.
Here's the other thing that irritates me, is the fact that birth control is not medicinally necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are certain hormonal diseases where they use birth control to treat it
right.
poorly,
mm-hmm.
but they use it to treat it.
Mm-hmm.
But things like blood pressure medication, diabetes medication, things that people actually need every day or right. they will die.
Right.
Nobody's saying, well, that should be free.
Yeah, well, there are people saying that.
Well, but they're not passing.
We call them communists.
They're not, you know, you talk to these liberal leftists, and mm-hmm. they say, well, birth control should just be free.
Mm.
Why?
Yeah, there's nothing intuitive to connect that as some kind of a privilege or right or it's
why are you this worked up about birth control when there are people who are dying every day because they can't afford their medications?
Yeah.
Why are you not going after that?
Food is not free, and food is more intuitive to the human condition than any medication.
Mm-hmm.
And food's not free.
Yeah.
And it would be unnatural if food is free.
Yeah.
And when the state does this from time to time, when the state interferes in food and begins to provide free food for people, it's the end result is always horrific.
Yep.
Just like right now when in the United States and the government is starting to, the state is starting to interfere in that process and starting to give out more and more free food because we're told, oh, there's people going hungry. Well, maybe if the state wasn't manipulating the economy the way they, oh my, I just about took the conversation in a different direction. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Well, now here, I wanted to ask this question. Let's assume that these birth control medications are just peachy. They're just wonderful. They're good, good, good. They're not just one good. They're good, good, good. One would expect that the richest people in the world would make sure that within their families, the females between the ages of about 16 and about 35 mm-hmm. would be taking those wonderful drugs, right? Mm-hmm. I just wonder if that's the case. People who have the money, who are not encumbered one way or the other, so whether it's free or whether it's not free, they're not even going to notice. I wonder if those people line up to have the females in their family in that age group taking these medications. Or I wonder if maybe those people don't, but they do try to push this free for the poor people, especially inner city and those living in trailer courts and other places that those people look down upon.
Mm-hmm. And I made the statement that it's anti-female, and I strongly stand by that statement. I'll try to just briefly touch on why I think that, because there's, and I blame the feminists, there's this movement that says, as a female, if you don't completely regulate your menstrual cycles, if you don't hold down a job every bit as important as a male, if you don't completely abandon the idea that you need to have a family, then you're not a feminist. If you dare try to raise a family or participate in anything that isn't masculine,
mm-hmm.
you're not an acceptable feminist. How is that? How is that even logical?
You're not an acceptable feminist unless we make you manlike in every way.
Yeah, they have they have these new birth control. It'll make it to where you only have to deal with that horrible period four times a year. Well, I'm not a male, okay? I'm a female, and females have a monthly cycle. And maybe you, Mr. Male Doctor, don't understand why that's necessary. And maybe you, Mr. Male Researcher, don't understand the side effects of not having a monthly period, but I'm pretty sure that if we've evolved to have a monthly period, mm-hmm. it's probably pretty necessary that we do so.
This is social engineering in an odd direction. If you think about it, we don't know how long human beings have been in their current state. We know that there's somewhere close to or a little over 10,000 years of actual recorded history that we can, you know, we can put our hands on and mm-hmm. say, you know, this wall was created here. We have writing from here. So we know roughly 10, and some of the more religious people that might be listening are saying, no, absolutely not. We're 5,000, 5,500 and something years since the creation or whatever. But either way, society has developed around a couple things. Male tendencies, which mm-hmm. are sometimes comical and sometimes annoying, and female tendencies. One of the female tendencies that has guided the development of culture, of society, of religion, of making humans what we are today, is the monthly cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Females go through a series of emotions. And whether we realize it or whether we want to admit it, our society is based around having the balance of the males and the somewhat annoying and somewhat comedic thing that is the male. And the cycles of the female going through the major emotional changes that she has every 4 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that in mythology, things like the phases of the moon were associated with these things because the changes were so dramatic.
Yep.
And now we want to alter those time, age-long, you know, things that actually created our society and all cultures, whether you're, you know, deep in the Andes or high in the Himalayas or in Manhattan or in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
no matter where you're at, that society was developed around that monthly cycle.
Yep.
About men walking on eggshells during the right time, you know, to not upset the process, and women having these surges of aggressiveness and then falling back. That's what society
yep.
has developed around.
And it's very frustrating that we take young girls who are just on the verge of this and we, you know, hand them feminine supplies and we go, oh, here, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, this is a part of life, and this mm-hmm. is a necessary part of life. And if you can't handle that,
mm-hmm.
what are you doing in society?
Yeah.
Like, why are we supposed to not discuss the fact that we're females?
Mm-hmm.
How is this not something that we should embrace? You know?
Yeah.
Why should I be forced to put on a suit and pretend like I'm not a female?
Just to satisfy feminists.
Yeah.
to fit with their mold.
Yeah.
It's just...
I'm sorry if you don't want to be female.
Mm.
I like being female. And I'm not going to be a male, even if I could.
It's as goofy as the other side of the same equation, where the supermodel type people think that there's only one acceptable mm-hmm. look for females, and they want you, you know, bone skinny to where you don't have a drop of meat on your bones, mm-hmm. and they want you walking in that bizarre fashion that those... Do you ever see those...
They're weird.
The supermodel walk thing?
Well, anybody
that's
walking in
unnatural.
High heels looks weird. You look like a stork.
Well, now we're back to insulting our listeners.
Anyway, you
wear high heels, you're going to the devil.
I'm not saying if you want to have a job and all of that, awesome, great, do it.
Mm-hmm.
But forcing a woman to be in a career
mm-hmm.
is the exact same thing as forcing her to be in the kitchen making babies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's forcing your perception of what a female should do onto that female. And it's not right.
Stinking Puritans.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
It yes. all boils down to the Puritans.
Anyway.
Well, that was a very exciting hour.
Maybe next week we won't be so ranty.
Be sure and check with us tomorrow and download the interview with Jeffrey Tucker. I've really enjoyed listening to Jeffrey talk this morning and hearing his opinion on things. And I want to give just a real quick mention of his books. He's got an older book that I just love. It's called Bourbon for Breakfast. I keep that book in our motorhome, and it's the kind of a book that you just pick up and you just read a chapter, and each chapter is freestanding. One doesn't lead to the next. You can read one chapter and be done, or you can sit down and read three or four chapters, and the time goes by in a flash. Now, his newer book is called It's a Jetson's World, and it's the same way. It's very uplifting, it's very positive, and Jeffrey looks at life, at everything that we live in and among and everything, and he sees it in a very interesting perspective. I'm not just saying this, I don't know of any writer that sees things the way Jeffrey Tucker sees them and writes about them. It's very unique. And again, with It's Jetson's World, each chapter is freestanding, and none of them are very long. You can just sit down and take, you know, 5 to 10 minutes and knock out a chapter and then set it down and walk away. If you can. It's much easier. You'll want to just sit there and just keep plowing through it. But anyway, so be sure and listen tomorrow for the interview with Jeffrey Tucker. Be sure and check back with us next week, next Wednesday. And again, assuming lightning doesn't strike us again, we'll try to put out another Bad Quaker podcast. So, and until then, this is Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Thanks a lot for listening, everybody.